very much. And again, for the third time in the last 24 hours, welcome to all of you who are here. My name, for those of you who were not in the previous two meetings, my name is Jake Moorhead. I'm a special assistant to the president for private sector initiatives. And again, I just want to reiterate what my colleague, I'm not going to say anything else, but introduce to you the head of the chairman of the President's Task Force on Private Sector Initiatives, C. William Verity. Mr. Verity was appointed by President Reagan last December to head up the Task Force on Private Sector Initiatives and has done a simply outstanding job. So without any further ado, I'd like to present to you Mr. Verity.
Thank you very much, Jay, and welcome to all of you at this marvelous session in the White House. During the year I've had the chance to serve as chairman of this task force, we've had some very distinguished groups come in and hear about private sector initiatives. I'd like to assure you here today that we've had no group more distinguished than you. I've heard about some of the things you've done as individuals. I know that you have written a letter to the president in which you have outlined what you have achieved and what you would like to communicate to the president. And I've not been privy to all of them, but I've heard about many of them. And I'd just like to congratulate you for what you are doing. I hope that this session that we're going through will be sufficiently exhilarating to you, that you will do what we hope, and that is you who are here with the salute to young volunteers will go back and start youth fairs and other things in addition to what you've been doing in your hometown. We have several different groups here today that I want to recognize. I'm going to introduce Frank Pace to you again. I understand he gave you a history of America last night and explained how he did tell General MacArthur that he was fired. He has a few more things that he wants to tell you today, so I won't say much about him just now, except this is Frank's day, and he's been looking forward to this for a long time. But he had some very able helpers in the form of David Gray. Bill Bricker of his committee is here today. And certainly Susan Kudlow and Beth Johns have just done an outstanding job. I want to recognize that because I've watched that hard work, and I know how much you put into it. We have some other members of the task force staff that helped put this together, and I wonder if they'd stand up so we can recognize them. And why, Susan, you stand up this time, too. But Howard, Carolyn and others. Well, let's give them a chance. Talking about young people, are there any task force interns that are here today who helped put this all together? Assure you that the work of our task force could not have been done without young people like you've seen here who we call interns who really do most of the work at the task force. We also want to thank the White House that you've seen, Jay Moorhead and Mike Castine and Jane, for all that they have done. And I'd like to mention another particular group that are here. Frank Pace was smart enough when he put together his committee on marshaling human resources to go to the 21 outstanding volunteer organizations in this country and say, what do you think we ought to do in the year that we have? Tell us the important things that you feel need to be reemphasized, or what are some of the things that maybe this task force can do that we're not doing? Each one of those 21 organizations Conversations is represented here today, and I only want to thank you, not just for being here today, but thank you for the tremendous job you have done over the past year in helping Frank. Let's give them a hand up. With you all. We have 16 bashful members. Only five got up. And, of course, to all of you who are with the salute to young volunteers and your advisors, who I understand are here from 33 different cities across the country, we're just delighted that you're here, and we're also delighted that the people who are putting up the Youth Fair exhibit are also here. So we have really a very distinguished audience. What I'd like to do for just a few minutes is to tell you a little bit about the task force and what the task force has tried to achieve in its year of existence. Actually, we have been so fortunate to have been a part in this rebuilding of America that is occurring with President Reagan. President Reagan has had two principal things that he's tried to do among all the others, but he's tried to develop a new economic package, a new way of looking at things from an economic point of view. And then what we've been involved with is that the president is trying to rekindle faith in our institutions. And he starts right with family and church or synagogue, our schools, our clubs, and all those things in a community that make that community more viable. Now, the president has felt that over a period of time, we've relied too much on government to do too many things for too many people. And he has felt that we can't afford that. However, the needs remain. So the president has said to the task force, do several things. First, he says, I know that many wonderful things are happening all through this country. Please try to find them and then surface them and make them available to other communities so they don't have to reinvent the wheel. And that is one of the things this task force has tried to do and that you're helping us with, is to find these examples of creative and innovative ways that communities have solved problems or people have solved problems, and then make those available to people throughout the country. And that is being done by our task force through a computerized data bank in which we have about 2,000 examples of these marvelous things that people on their own initiative are doing around this country. And then he said, I know that over time we have probably put impediments in the way of the private sector doing what they'd like to do. And so he said, please try to identify what those impediments are and then suggest how we can get rid of them. And he has said, I'm sure there are incentives that could be used to encourage people to create jobs, to do more in the way of volunteering and other things. And please come forth with incentives. And he also suggested that he knows that where the problems exist in the way of needs of people is at the community level. And so the president has said, see if there isn't a way to develop more partnerships between the public and private sector so that we can address the true needs of a community and can involve all parts of that community, whether it's the mayor or the city manager on the public sector side. And on the private sector side, it's, again, your churches and synagogues, your educators, your labor unions, business people, professional people, not-for-profit organizations, all of those people who can supply both financial and human resources to help solve problems. So that this task force has been trying to stimulate activity out throughout the country. We have also had an opportunity to work with the agencies and departments of government to find out how perhaps they can do more in the way of encouraging private initiative and partnerships to get their work done. But, of course, what we're here to talk about today is one of the major efforts of the task force, and that is volunteers and volunteering. That's what Frank's committee is all about. And what we've been trying to do here is to first learn from the 21 organizations what they think needs to be done, and then to try to do that. One of the things that the committee is putting out is a guide on volunteering, and that was developed in cooperation with these 21 organizations. Another one of the activities is what we're all participating in, a youth fair, and how maybe we can get youth fairs started throughout the country so that youths in different cities will see how youths in other cities are helping in the volunteer area. Frank has said, and I'm sure he told you last night, that he believes that the basic third part of the stool of what our American system is all about, that third part of the stool, are volunteers. And you heard Secretary Schweiker say today that in the Head Start program, which is in the HHS cabinet department, there are 500,000 volunteers working with the young people in Head Start. What the president asked a group of educators and church people when they were in here in the way of volunteers, he said, "I'm afraid that people have been so interested in jobs for money that they have forgotten the tremendous satisfaction that we get in our soul when we volunteer." And he asked these national religious organizations, "Would you do one thing for me this year? Would you sometime during the year give a sermon on the glorification of volunteering?" Now, I don't know how many sermons are being given around the country on that subject, but I know that the level of acceptance of volunteering is being put back on that pedestal where it belongs, because there is no higher service to community or this country than volunteering. I like to tell just one story about one of the things that's happened in this country that sort of pulls it all together for me, but this happened in a little high school in Monroe, Ohio. And the problem was they had a losing football team. And they wondered, what can they do about it? And the first thing you do is you fire the coach you got and you hire a new one. And they did that. And the new coach came in and he said, "I think I got the answer to your problem." He said, "You don't have any weightlifting or exercise room in this school where you can build up the bodies of these young people so they can compete with those bigger, stronger people out there." And they all said, "Well, that makes a lot of sense. Let's put in a weightlifting room." So they went to the school board and said, "We need $50,000 to put in a weightlifting room." And, of course, the school superintendent said, "You must be crazy. I don't have any money for things like that. I don't have enough money to pay the teachers." So they went back home, and it so happens that one of the fathers that was in that group is my barber. And he came to me with this story. He said, "I've been reading about what you're trying to do to stimulate private initiative around the country and get people to be more self-reliant." He said, "What would you think if we tried to organize this whole area of Monroe, Ohio, to do this thing ourselves?" And I said, "More power to you." And that's the last I was involved with it. But that barber and his associates, within 45 days, had together, with volunteers and their own resources, with help from the community, put in the weightlifting room. As they looked at the weightlifting room, they saw the boys' locker room, which was just in disarray. And they said, "Well, we can't have a good football team without a boys' locker room." And so, again, the carpenters, the plumbers, the painters, the volunteers put in a new boys' locker room. Then they looked at the girls' locker room and they said, "We've got to do it for the girls if we do it for the boys." And so they completely redid that. And then they said, "Well, if we're going to have a good football team, we better have a stadium that looks like something." So on two different Sundays, all the parents came out with donated paint and painted that stadium. And one last thing they did is they thought, we want to have baseball games here at this school, and so they fenced the baseball diamond to meet the regulations of the state so they could have the ball team play there. Now, I happened to go to a dedication of those five things, and I have never been so excited or thrilled in my life to see the tremendous satisfaction that those parents had in doing that for themselves. First place, they did it better than the school board would have done it anyway. But they were so delighted and they were so proud that their children could see what they had done. Well, to me, this is really the essence of America, and it's the essence of private sector initiative, and it's the essence of volunteering. And Frank Pace is the man who has led this whole effort for our task force, and he has done just an outstanding job. One of the reasons is that Frank Pace is such an outstanding man. But he also knows more about volunteering, I think, than many, many other people in the country, because he runs the International Executive Service Corps, which is an organization dedicated to using talents of people in all walks of life to help others, whether it's in this country or whether it's to solve problems of cities in this country. I'm sure when Frank was introduced to you last night, you know of his distinguished career in business and in government. He told us just before this meeting that he started his government service in 1945, and the first time he came to the White House was in 1946. And I made the comment that this will only relate to the people who are here today in light of their grandparents. I don't think any of you who we're honoring today were born anywhere near then. And I doubt if your parents were. That puts you just where you belong, Frank. One of the distinguished men in America and one of the people who has done such an outstanding job for this task force and this president, and a man whom I'm proud to introduce to you at this moment as the head honcho for this whole effort. And we're so proud of what you've done, Frank Pace.
This touches me particularly because Bill and I are old friends, and we sort of have a rule that we rarely say anything nice about each other. But this was public, and he was forced to. And I want you all to understand that this may not have come from his heart, but in his real heart, he really thinks quite differently than me. You know, I was thinking, I was 32 when I first came here to the White House. I was executive assistant to Postmaster General. I came to this room. And I thought how magnificent it was to come at 32 and how glorious it was. I had never come into this White House, this center of our national life, without a deep sense of thrill. And I have it today, just as you have. I worked very intimately with President Truman. He admired the Oval Office inordinately. He just felt, even as president, that it was a great privilege to walk into that Oval Office. And because he felt that way, when you walked in with him, you felt that way too. It just occurred to me, you know, we're thinking about my country, your country. I wonder how many people your age have been in the Kremlin. Give that a thought. I'd like to bet you. And think how lucky you are to be here to see the President of the United States, who is not only a political leader, he is also the titular leader, he is the military leader, he is the leader of foreign policy. And like the rest of the world, we combine everything in the President. He has to be everything. And I remember when Mr. Truman asked me to try to find duties for the Vice President, who was his friend, Alvin Barkley, I had a hard time finding him because everybody wants to see the president. And therefore, it is a unique office. Not only is it probably the most respected office in the world. It is also probably the most powerful, even though the limitations are the ones I described last night. I just never walk into this place, but I think how lucky I am to be here. And having talked to a great many of you, I know I'm reflecting your sentiments, and you'll have the thrill and the pleasure of listening to firsthand and asking questions of the President of the United States. Bill Verity has been very supportive of what we all think is so important, volunteerism. Never been anything that I've asked him to do in this year that he has not done. There's never been any thought that I've advanced that he has fundamentally not found some way to be in accord with. We couldn't have done what we've done if it hadn't been for Bill. And I have to say to you, the President quite deeply believes in volunteerism. It comes out every time you hear him speak on the subject. This is not a presidential pattern. This is a Ronald Reagan pattern. He believes in volunteerism. And when you have the President of the United States on your side, if you can't make it, you got to be pretty poor. And we're going to make it. We're going to do the things that I said to you when I've had a chance to talk to you. Two things that are critical to this essential part of American society, namely that everyone understand this society won't function without volunteerism. We are really the only country in the world that has volunteerism, and we've had it from the very word go, and the country won't function without it, and our job is to make sure that the country knows that. We've done a lot of things to achieve that. We've worked with the Advertising Council, which is a great institution that will have 2 years of supporting volunteerism. We've worked with the independent sector, which is a great institution, which is putting out a magnificent video on philanthropy and volunteerism. We have worked with the Postmaster General, who will have a stamp and posters in all the post office. We have written 1,400 editors of newspapers, probably in your community, asking them to run each week a 8-column spread that will identify the need for volunteers, what they are expected to do, and what their qualifications should be. When that's tied together with an effective, professional volunteer organization, it has produced more volunteers than any other means of achieving it. And we're going to bring that down to the proposition of doing the same thing for young volunteers. The second thing you're part of, and I've asked you to help me, and I expect you to help me, and that is, how do we find a way over this country to ensure that we have a professional system of making sure that young volunteers are challenged by what they are given to do? It's a huge task. Nobody can do it alone. But you are the front runners. You are the people out in front. You're going to come back to me and let me know what you think, because I've never thought anyone could do it unless they were actually, I remember old President Theodore Roosevelt, my heart is with the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is covered by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly and errs again and again, and in the end knows it, the triumph of high achievement, but at least if he fails, he fails while daring greatly, so that his place will never be with those cold and timid souls who knew neither defeat nor victory. We're not going to know defeat. We're going to know victory. And I say we can't do it here. I've got to have help from you. We have arranged, and properly so, that some of your peers will tell us some of their experiences. And the master of ceremonies for that is Bill Gore of Detroit. And I apologize, Bill, of Princeton University. Bill Gore.
She let me do that. I came up there. I was scared. Didn't know but a few people up there. And a staff member came over to me. He said, "Hello, son. How are you doing? Would you like to play a game of pool with me?" And that just really touched me. That their staff members would just come over to somebody they don't know. Even though it's their job, they just put their lives into it. And they just reach out and touch you. Say, "Come on, son, let's go play a game." It wasn't a regular staff member, it was a volunteer member. And I think from that day on, it really instilled in me a desire to be like that person, to be able to come up to somebody and say, "Hey, why don't we do something together that could help both of us?" And I think that helped me tremendously. I went on in the boys' club, and as I moved up in the rank, the first service organization I was able to join was the Torch Club, and it's a service organization for the younger members. And they put the emphasis on, number one, have fun and get to know each other. Number two, have fun and grow. And there was always that emphasis that you grow through volunteerism. It isn't something that you're just giving out to somebody for free. You're going to gain back from it. You're going to learn something about what you're doing. And you're going to grow from it. And it's going to make you a better person for doing it. I came up to the Torch Club. We helped clean up around the building. It wasn't anything big, but it was something that we could do as young children. That we could say, "Hey, we helped clean that up. Hey, it looks good." And we really liked that. And that really gave us a sense of accomplishment. Then I came up into the older group, the Keystone Club, and we started going out into the community. And that's when I really think I got set on fire for volunteerism. Our first project that I ever worked on with the Keystone Club was going out to a senior citizen home and just helping them around their home go out and get groceries. And I think that that touched me immensely. But number one, a lot of us had stereotypes about how we thought senior citizens would be. We thought they'd be old, cranky, senile, no offense. But we found out that we were the ones that were looking through the wrong end of the glass. And we really found out that we made some deep and lasting friends. We just really learned something that we never knew before, that no matter what age you are, you're still a person, you still need to be loved, and you still want somebody to be doing something for you. And whenever they said thank you for doing something, that just made me feel so good. So I just like to say the volunteerism has really helped me. It's motivated me to do well in school, in my boys' club, because I always wanted to be able to say, hey, I can help you in this. I've done it before. So without further ado, I'd just like to introduce three other super people. I'm sure that their stories are just going to be dynamic, and we can really gain from listening to them. So Kristen Anderson, Brand Starr, and Renee Jones. Kristen?
My name is Kristen Anderson. I'm from Wilmington, Delaware, and I'm a member of the Hot Anders 4-H Club. I didn't become involved as a volunteer the same way that Bill did. I grew up in a 4-H family. My mother was a 4-H volunteer clothing leader, and I grew up with 4-H in the cradle. There were constantly girls at my house sewing, and I couldn't wait till I got old enough to do the same thing they did. So 4-H has meant a lot to me, and it's been more of a family organization than anything else. 4-H is an organization full of many activities, and acting as a volunteer plays an important role in 4-H life. Volunteering is thought to be giving of one's time and energy. Volunteering is a giving experience, but it is more. It is a receiving experience. As a 4-H'er, I volunteered to work after school as a cooking instructor at the West End Neighborhood House. Working with small children was a new experience for me, and of one I was rather hesitant. I was unsure of where to begin, what to teach, what to cook, and what to do with the little boys, rather reluctant to cook at all. The children were easy to work with. They made clear their likes and dislikes, especially their disgusted outcries at date nut balls. They learned quickly and eagerly and joined in, even the boys. They may have been influenced by the fact that to eat at the end, you had to cook in the beginning. My experiences at West End helped me to work with small children, and I enjoyed their honesty and openness. In the process, I learned about myself, my patience, or at times my lack of patience, and my ability to communicate with others. 4-H has presented me with other volunteer opportunities, and these opportunities have influenced me in my career choice. I was very involved in 4-H clothing project, and that has led me to decide to take up a career in fashion merchandising. And I think without my background in 4-H, I wouldn't have chosen the career that I have. I'd like to close with this thought, that volunteering is more than just a giving experience. It is a receiving experience, and I think that you can learn from volunteering. Thank you.
Thank you, Kristen. You know, Bill, I too am excited. I'm excited to be here with other volunteers who have come together to this youth volunteer conference to discuss the very idea of spreading it in our own communities. You know, why are we volunteers? Why are we here? I think we all have to ask that question. Well, I'd like to share with you my personal experience, and I'm sure that yours are very similar to mine. I'd like to take you back about, I was in the fifth grade, about 11 years old, and I was really interested what the other guys in the class were doing. And they came to class, and they were talking about what they did in scouting and the terrific experiences that they had out on campouts, the devious things that they were doing really turned me on. And I couldn't wait until I was old enough to become a Boy Scout. And then one day, my dad came home after talking to a scoutmaster that he works with, and he said, Brad, would you like to be a Boy Scout? And that was it. I was hooked. So as all new scouts do, they learn the scout oath and the scout law, which are the basic ideals of the scouting program. And I became very confident that I knew everything there was about scouting and about the outdoors. So my first camp out came, and it was not much less than a disaster. I became the object of entertainment for the other guys in the troop. I, not knowing really what I was doing, put my tent in a gully, and it rained that night, and I woke up in a river. I really didn't know what I was doing, but I soon learned the tricks of the trade, and I grew because of that experience. And I, you know, became a better person, a better camper, and learned one of the greater lessons of scouting, that it's in the outdoors where the practical reality of the scout oath and law come to life. All the ideals are taught in the outdoors. So I grew from a green tenderfoot in this program, and I became a stronger person, a more responsible citizen, and a better American because of what some people did, not for money, but as the result of others' volunteer experience. And when I realized that, I made a commitment that I, too, want to put back into the program and volunteer my time to others. And I think the greatest reward that I've had in serving as an assistant scoutmaster and seeing what those young guys are doing in the troop and how they're growing, I was overhearing a conversation of a patrol in the troop of about 8 guys who are talking together, trying to decide what they can do as a group to serve, to be a volunteering unit in their community. And having been a result of the volunteer program and volunteering myself and seeing these young guys volunteering themselves, I was just overwhelmed and, wow, that's volunteerism to the third power, I'd have to say. So I agree with Bill. What we have here is a real spark. We realize that there is something that you do get in giving. In a day when people are really interested only in getting rather than giving, we have a big challenge, not only to recognize that we are a spark, but to go home into our communities and add fuel to the fire, and it will grow and glow and warm the hearts of all around, and we'll become better Americans, we'll become better people, and so will those affected around us. And our country, the United States of America, will become a much better place. Thank you. Okay, I'd like to introduce Renee for her experience.
Good morning. Good afternoon. I'm Renee Jones, and I became a volunteer during high school. And I became involved because there's a lot of peer pressure in my school and my community. I was never one to follow the leader. In my opinion, everyone's a leader. Some people just don't exercise their right. They think that the only way to be known and popular is to follow the leader. Well, I set out for a way that I could become a leader. And the way I set out was I became involved with VICA, the Vocational Industrial Clubs of America. And because it is a student-run organization, you can speak your mind and give your opinions, and this would also allow me to become a leader on my own. I became a member of the safety committee, where I soon was elected reporter and on to co-chairperson. The safety committee puts together a scrapbook where every year we compose pictures and literature of what we have done during the year, and we send it to state competition where we took first place. It then goes on to national competition where we took third place. I decided why limit my abilities to just school, and I began helping first churches. I had an experience with a church down the street from me called St. Gregory's because the Women's Day are a lot older women, and they wanted to put together a youth carnival for the children, for the little children, and they really didn't know how to get it started. So I passed out flyers and everything around and put them indoors and, you know, passed the word around that there was going to be a fair, and everybody came involved, and it turned out to be a success. And at the end, one of the women came to me and said, "We couldn't have done it without you." And I felt real good that, you know, I helped these people and I was benefiting the church. Okay. And I'm also a member of the anti-crime team. Baltimore has held the youth fair where all the schools paraded down to the convention center, and each school shared with us their talent. Afterwards, we broke up for sessions where we discussed life after high school and how to find a job. Their theme was youth in action, and the words action mean A is for achievement, C is for concern, T was for talent, I was involvement, and O was opportunity, N was for now. The affair was a success. In closing, I would just like to thank anyone and everyone who had anything to do with the preparation of this recognition. This experience has certainly inspired me to continue and expand my volunteer services and train others with the knowledge I have gained thus far. And I won't rest until I see volunteers grow worldwide, because the personal reward you feel when helping someone means more to me than any dollar. And I would just like to say to all volunteers, be proud, because you didn't just complain, you contributed. And we've only just begun. Thank you.
Wow. That was terrific, really. You four were great. And I got news for you. We got people sitting out here who could have done essentially the same thing. It's just a matter of who was up here. Most of all, I think it shows, Bill, what young people are able to do. They get up here and speak with the ease and grace of people who've been 30 years at this business. And if we're going to put it in your hands, I feel very comfortable. Also, I heard a lot of words you don't read in the newspapers or hear on the television. There are a lot of words like sacrifice, a lot of words like doing for others, a lot of words like the dollar isn't the answer to everything. I'd like to hear a lot more of those words. And I'd like to see them spread around this country. And I've got to say, I really jumped up and down when I heard it. Jay Moorhead has got a video he's going to describe to you here that we're going to give you very briefly. And then if we have a moment, and Bill Verity and I are trying to make this as short as possible, we'll let you ask us some questions.
Can we just play the 1 5-minute video? Okay. We're going to show you a 5-minute videotape that is about some youth who adopted the residence of a senior citizen home, and it is really one of the more moving experiences, I think, that I've ever seen. If you all can direct your attention to one of the monitors, I think it should be coming up sometime shortly. Press come in and get their cameras all ready for the president. So what I'd like you all to do is stand up, stretch a little bit for a couple of minutes, and then stay right at your seats, and then as soon as we give you the word, sit back down again. We'll have time for a couple questions and answers before the president comes. ladies and gentlemen, if you could all take your seats again, the president will be here shortly.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
So much to make this country a better place to live. Seeing all of you here today certainly disproves the old Army myth, never volunteer. I hope you feel comfortable here. This is your house as much as mine. It's our national home. This white mansion and the gleaming marble monuments that we have in the city here represent the ideals of generations of young people before you. You're inspired by the great marble monuments of Washington and identify with the passion behind the inscriptions, well, that's as it should be. Those monuments, this city and this country, are dedicated to you in a belief that you'll reach for the stars and lift mankind to even greater heights. Every generation sees farther than the previous generation because it stands on the shoulders of those who went before. Seeing you today and knowing of the energy and dedication you bring to the American volunteer spirit, I know our nation will only become stronger and greater when you are leading us. Most of you are members of the national volunteer organizations, I understand, and I'm sure you understand the importance of helping others in these difficult times. But you may not be aware that volunteering is an old American tradition. We've always been a country of neighbors dependent on one another. Strong cooperative community spirit is the heart and soul of our democracy and the key to our quality of life. Your efforts at this National Youth Volunteer Meeting and the projects that you will tackle afterward have a great potential for enriching that American spirit. I sat here at dinner one night in one of the state dinners and had someone from another country, which I won't name, I was talking about something program, Bill. And this person said, well, yes, you can here in America. And I was kind of curious. And then what she was frankly admitting was that not in very many places in the world but this one do we have that spirit where we get together and do something voluntarily and have those kind of programs. By improving the recruitment and recognition of youth volunteers, you could greatly increase their impact on community welfare. With better communication and cooperation, you could bring about even greater and more dramatic results. My challenge to you young people here today is to return to your hometowns with a special mission. Initiate a collaborative program similar to the Washington, D.C. Youth Volunteer Fair, and then keep me informed of how you do. If we can start those fairs in cities and towns across America, the momentum of youth building a better tomorrow will inspire all of our citizens to join in the renewal. There's an old Irish proverb that says, praise youth and it will prosper. Well, my praise for you today comes from my heart, and I hope it will encourage you to work even harder for even greater goals. Now, I hope that praise and recognition for all our young volunteers will be a byproduct of this meeting. But more than anything, I hope to encourage your ideals and dreams so they'll grow with you and America will prosper. And when we're congratulating our younger volunteers, we mustn't forget the adults who have guided you, guided this young people project into an active leadership role. Many of these exceptional adults are with us today, and they're pretty easily identified. Would like to give special thanks to Frank Pace and Bill Bricker, the members of the Task Force on Private Sector Initiatives who have devoted so much time and energy on behalf of you young volunteers. Bill Verity tells me that volunteerism is being successfully promoted across the country from youth to senior citizens, and you're all proof of that. And to help tell the story to the policymakers, I understand the Private Sector Initiatives Task Force has produced a publication entitled Volunteers, a Valuable Resource, which I look forward to reading. Now, I know that many of you young people have written letters to me about your volunteer experiences, and the task force has shared some of those comments with me. I'd like to read a couple of them. Karen Edwards, member of the Jamestown Girls Club in Jamestown, New York, wrote, the satisfaction I receive from my volunteering far exceeds the amount of my weekly paycheck from my job at Super Duper Markets. The satisfaction that I receive as a volunteer is simply seeing the joy in the girls' faces when I'm there for them to reach out to me. And Sydney Ridley, member of the YMCA in Nashville, Tennessee, wrote, earlier this year I participated in the Love Run for Multiple Sclerosis, and I enjoyed doing this very much because the idea behind this cause was so very close to me and my family because of my mother's illness. I ran 104 miles and was able to collect about $32 for this very worthy cause. Working with other underprivileged kids has been a most rewarding experience, and I feel that if I'm of any help to them, which I feel I am, I will have served to help my country and the world. You know, I have to tell you just a little, as briefly as I can, a little poignant story of the opposite way. And it made me think that maybe we ought to have billboards of this kind of all over the country. It was one of those nights in California when the storm season, and down at Newport Beach, the homes along the beach there were being destroyed, washed away by the high tides and the waves that were breaking against them. And the TV stations from the community were down there getting this, and it was 2 o'clock in the morning. Was still watching TV because they were getting this, and you were seeing damage that was being done, but you were seeing the volunteers working throughout the night to sandbag these homes and try to save them. And at one point, 2 o'clock in the morning, and it gets cold in California at night. California is the only place in the world where you can fall asleep under a rose bush in full bloom and freeze to death. And this lad was still in his swimming trunks, and he was wet, and he was cold, had to be tired, and he was still lugging sandbags, and one of the commentators caught him right in front of the camera. Did he live in one of these houses? No. He didn't live there at the beach. And finally the question came, well, why? Why was he doing this? And the answer was so poignant, and you've already found the answer and supplied it. He said, well, he stopped for a second. Well, he said, I guess it's the first time any of us ever felt we were needed. You are needed, and there's no limit to what you can do. I thank you for coming here today, for lifting my spirits, and I'm sure my spirits will be lifted even more after I read the additional letters from the volumes which I understand, or the volunteers which I understand you have for me today. I thank you for the work that you've done, the work that you're going to do. Wish you good luck, and God bless you. And now, I bet at one time in your life, you've said, if I could only ask him a question, I'd like to know, and I don't have too much time because I understand we're going out there. I'm going to have a chance to meet each one of you individually, but yes.
Mr. President, on behalf of the youth volunteers, we're presenting you with letters and thoughts on the importance of volunteerism.
staff know this is true. I'll read them, everyone. I thank you very much for this. And now, if we do for a few minutes have a little time and someone wants to ask a question, you do, fire away.
I'm Angela Williams from Nashville, Tennessee, and an air of respect follows your administration route from the previous ones that I've seen, and I just want to know how we, as volunteers, can carry out this dignity into America and enable it to spread.
Now, carry out?
Can carry the dignity of your administration out and enable it to spread in our volunteer work.
Well, I thank you very much for saying that we have a dignity to do that. But I think it is carrying on what you do, because that is one of the characteristics that I believe in and believe this country has, and that we were in danger and have been in danger of losing, is drifting into a belief that, well, government would do it all. We didn't need to do things voluntarily. And if you carry on with that, and as far as dignity is concerned, that goes with what we have the most of any country in the world. It is the dignity of individual freedom, the dignity of the individual that he is supreme. You know, I've read a lot of constitutions. Well, I guess every country's got a constitution. I've read the Soviet constitution. I don't think they have, but I have. And there's a difference. Maybe this isn't true of all of them, but let me just tell you, one great difference that spells out just what you're talking about and which goes with the dignity of being free. Almost all of the constitutions, or all of them that I've seen of other countries, say here are the things that the government allows the people to do. And our constitution says we the people will allow the government to do the following things. Our Constitution is our Bill of Particulars that says to the government, these are the only things you can do. And if they aren't in here, you can't do them. And it's a very unique thing, and we should always remember it. Someone else? So many pages here. Well, yes, it is that there is, that these volunteer efforts can do it so much more efficiently, the things that you're doing, so much more effectively than government can, that it isn't a case of waiting for government to do it. Take a look at the neighborhood, the community, the thing that needs doing, and then find out how you can enlist people to do this. More than 100 years ago, a Frenchman visited this country. And when he went home, he wrote to his fellow Frenchmen about what he had seen here. And he said that the thing that he noticed was, he said, you know, in America, someone sees a problem that needs solving, and they cross the street and talk to a neighbor about it. And the first thing you know, a committee is formed. And he said, finally, the problem is being solved. And he said, you won't believe this, but not a single bureaucrat had anything to do with it. You take that one home. And then I'll come to you. Yes, I'll come straight across.
I'm Vega from Denver, Colorado, with the Boy Scouts of Denver. And I was wondering, we've been talking about volunteerism and everything like this, but I want to know exactly what have you done in terms of volunteer work over your life, and I was wondering what exactly has it meant personally to you?
Well, as far back as I go, it's a varied experience, and when I was in Hollywood and in the motion picture industry, I was an officer and a member of our guild, the Screen Actors Guild, for some 25 years, and six times its president. And unlike a lot of union officers, in our guild, you served for free. It was a volunteer effort. But I've also been connected with many of the worthwhile and the charitable efforts. And So the job I've got right now is a kind of a volunteer. So, but the reward for it. And then I was raised to believe in the principle of tithing and believe in giving of yourself as well as of whatever material resources you have. And I think it was summed up better than I can say it by a man who spent his entire life with the Salvation Army. He said, life begins when you begin to serve. And I think that I believe that and believe it has for me. Yes, and it is in this very overall thing. Oh, there are lots of goals and things that I mean that are part of my job that we have to get done. We have to restore the economy. We've got to solve this tragic problem of the extensive unemployment in our land. But I think the real goal is summed up in getting back to the very thing that Bill Verity is heading up for us as a volunteer himself, this private initiative thing, where we find all the areas that are out there and the things that can be done and that don't call for a gigantic bureaucracy or a government program, because though somehow there isn't the heart in it done that way that there is when it is neighbor to neighbor. And to see America seek out and solve these problems for itself, if we could get back to that, feel that I had accomplished a great deal if we had that in our country. We once had it. When I was your age and younger, growing up, the things that we heard about when World War I ended, we went to the aid of the stricken countries, both enemies and friends. And a man named Hoover headed that commission up as a citizen volunteer, and it was a volunteer effort. We fed the hungry of the world. When the great earthquake destroyed Tokyo, again, it was America to the rescue, and it wasn't done by a government program. It was done by volunteers. When I was a young man, I was a sports announcer, radio just starting, I remember doing, I guess, what must have been the first, wasn't a telethon then, it was a radiothon, all night at our radio station out in Iowa, because in Ohio the floods had done such damage, and we were raising money, and it was the volunteers who came in, and a volunteer effort for restoring what had been done there, the feeding of the hungry and the famine. Famines in India, another place in the world. Again, it was the volunteers, and it was a volunteer movement that just sprung from the grassroots of America. We just assumed it was our obligation to move and do something for those others. And if we could remember one thing, when World War II ended, and it looked like maybe we could have been falling into another dark ages, Pope Pius XII in Rome said, God has placed the fate of an afflicted mankind in the hands of America. And America is known and is capable of great and generous deeds. In fact, he said we had a genius for those deeds. Well, by this time, we were beginning to do it kind of government-wise with the Marshall Plan and so forth. But let's keep that spirit alive, of what that lady told me here at that dinner, that we are the most generous people on earth. Never lose that. I know I've taken too much time, and I have to go down the hall, and then you're going to come down the hall and we're going to have our pictures.